This is Colonel Danny Gillum, the host of Frontlines of Freedom, the nation's largest military news and talk radio show. We address the most pressing issues facing the security of our nation, our armed forces, our veterans, and their families. Please join us every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio show.
Hey, it's your liberty-loving Latino amigo, Rich Valdez, host of America at Night. Weeknights, we're letting you know what's happening live all across America. We'll have newsmakers and experts coming on, talking about the hot topics of the day. Plus, in our third hour, whatever you want to talk about with open phones across America, our nightly town hall. I look forward to hearing from you on the next America at Night with me, Rich Valdez.
Weeknights from 7 to 10 p.m. on KCNR.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
It is, I think, teaching our kids to be courageous in the sense that they will look different than a lot of their peers. Mm-hmm. But over time, these families said that their kids actually started to notice the differences positively. They said, oh my goodness, like our friends who are on smartphones, they're so lame. Like they don't talk to us when we're in group settings.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Claire Morrell, fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and also author of the brand new book, The Tech Exit, A Practical Guide to Freeing Kids and Teens from Smartphones. We go in-depth with Claire about the tech exit on today's program. Claire also is director of the Ethics and Public Policy Center's Technology and Human Flourishing Project. You can find more about the book at thetechexit.com. Claire, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
As I read The Tech Exit, something occurs to me. It's a lot about parents, obviously, and parent pressure. This is a subject, though, in which parents are asked to do something that they instinctively know could cause some harm and probably isn't all that great for their children. Why is this issue of smartphones perhaps different than other topics and dilemmas that parents have to deal with?
Yes, I think the problem has been that the smartphone has become such a ubiquitous part of childhood. It has trickled down from adults to now, like, the average age of first smartphone is something like 10 years old. And I think subtly, this can be a issue in the sense that parents kind of know that the screen is bad, that the smartphone is bad, but they are pressured into it by kind of peer pressure from their kids. Even parental peer pressure, other parents, I think, now say, well, if you don't give your kid a smartphone, like, how are you going to know where they are? How are you going to keep them safe? And so there's immense pressure towards the smartphone, but parents know that it is harmful to kids. And so they're told by the tech companies that they can give their child a smartphone as long as they put parental controls and screen time limits in place, then they'll mitigate all the dangers. And what I expose in my book is that screen time limits are not working out, mm-hmm. and parental controls are a myth, that these solutions are not adequate to the level of harm and to the problem that smartphones are causing. And so I am asking parents to do something that is currently countercultural, but I'm actually trying to change the culture. And I show in my book that there are more and more families every day opting out, keeping smartphones out of childhood completely, even through the teen years, and that doing this in communities is really powerful because then it removes that peer pressure, that if there are just a few other families who join you in resisting these devices for kids, you start to kind of push the tide of smartphones the other direction. And so that's what I'm advocating for in my book. I'm not saying it's easy, but I am saying it's what's necessary, mm-hmm. and that is the best thing we can do for our kids. And all the families I spoke to say this is one of the best parenting decisions they made. They don't regret it. Even if there were points of resistance, they say it was 100% worth it. And even their grown children who are now in college, even if they didn't always appreciate those restrictions at the time, now say they're so grateful for them when they see the difference in their peers.
The first third or so is about why it's a problem. The second two-thirds or so is how to fix mm-hmm. it.
That's right.
screen limits aren't working out, you say, and one of the reasons I was struck by is something that perhaps is clear but not obvious, which is even when children aren't using these devices, they are, in your words, mentally consuming and compulsion inducing, meaning they spend time they're not using screens then thinking about screens and what they're going to do when they get a screen, which means it never clicks off in their mind.
That's exactly right. And this is one of the things I really try to explain to parents, is that the screen time limits don't map on to a child's mental or emotional time. Because the nature of the technology is so addicting, even a small amount releases this big burst of dopamine, which creates a constant craving to go back for more. And so they're living in the virtual world long after they leave it, wondering what followers they've gotten or likes on their recent post, or even just what they're missing out on. And it's that craving for more dopamine that draws them back, even just mentally and emotionally. And so I think what I try to explain in the book is we've treated screens as if they're like sugar, something that is harmful in large doses but can be enjoyed in moderation, when in reality, the impact on the brain is much more like a highly addictive drug, which is even a small amount is incredibly overpowering to a child's developing brain and nervous system. And so we have an analogy problem. And I think any parent would recognize, okay, I'm not asking myself how many cigarettes I'm okay with my child smoking today or how much fentanyl I'm okay with them doing, because we've just recognized those products are inherently addictive and harmful. And I'm trying to show parents that screens need to be more in that category because of just how strong the dopamine response is in the brain, and how difficult that is to a child who their prefrontal cortex of their brain, which is what is responsible for our emotional regulation, our self-control, our impulse control, is not fully developed until age 25. Mm-hmm. And so a child's brain, when it comes to smartphones or social media, is all gas pedal and no brakes. And so if we're giving these things to our children, we're just inherently setting them up to become addicted to these things. We're not setting them up for success to be able to use these things wisely.
You have a couple of examples of children who have lost their eyes oil glands,
yes,
due to screen usage. I'd never heard of this before, but it appears to be a real problem.
Yes, this was one of the things that was most shocking to me in my own research. Talking to this ophthalmologist who's been doing this research, and she was seeing kids coming into her practice that were 8 or 9 year olds with chronic dry eye, which is normally a condition that's seen in like 70-year-olds or 80-year-olds. Like as we age, we lose those oil glands in our eyes. But what's happening, she said, is that when kids are staring at screens, they're not blinking enough. And blinking is critically important because every time we blink, it releases oil from these glands that lubricate our eyes so that they don't become dry. And what happens is these kids staring at screens, they're not blinking. And so they're not releasing the oil from those glands. And then what happens over time is that those glands just completely dry up. And she said the problem is that this is permanent damage. These kids don't get those oil glands back. And so then for the rest of their lives, these kids will struggle with chronic dry eye, which means they have to constantly be lubricating their eyes with external drops. Because if they don't, she said, scar tissue actually builds up on the eye and can lead to blindness.
Hmm. Claire Morrell with us, her book, The Tech Exit, A Practical Guide to Freeing Kids and Teens from Smartphones. Parents think they can control screen time, and they also think that they can control what their children are accessing or who is accessing their children. But you argue and show that parental controls are a myth. Why don't they work?
The fundamental reason that they don't work is because the companies aren't actually giving parents real control. They're advertised as that, but they don't do anything to change the underlying business model. The algorithms of these companies is what's actually in control of what a child is seeing or doing on the platform. And it may just give parents a few more tools like setting time limits or privacy settings, but they have no insight into what a child is seeing or doing on their feeds, who they're exchanging direct messages with, what the content of those direct messages are. And then the worst part is that some of the most egregious apps like Snapchat and TikTok, they even block external third-party control apps that a parent might purchase, like an external software, mm-hmm. They completely block. And so what the parents don't always realize is that these apps, social media platforms, have their own in-app browsers, their own portals to the internet that a child can be accessing things on without ever even leaving the app, and a parent can't see into that. Often the filters and controls don't block things on the in-app browsers. And so I explain in my book that a child can actually click through to Pornhub, one of the worst pornography websites, inside of the Snapchat app without ever leaving the app in just 5 clicks. And a parent would have no idea. It would just look to them like their kid had spent an hour in Snapchat. And even more innocuous apps like educational games or even like the Bible app have been found to be exploited by predators, because a lot of these apps now have these social media components added to them where you can friend people and message people. And so it's just, there are hundreds of apps on a phone or tablet with each their own portal to the internet. And there are so many bugs and loopholes and workarounds that it's just impossible to effectively lock down a smart device for a child.
That's Claire Morrell. We continue our conversation about the tech exit next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Now open at Turtle Bay Museum, Discover Steampunk, an exhibition for all ages.
Featuring futuristic technology inspired by 19th century Victorian designs.
Steampunk reimagines steam-powered machinery and gadgets as modern inventions. Discover Steampunk is on display at Turtle Bay Museum by the Sundial Bridge in Reading.
And is produced by the Imagine Team, free for members or included with paid admission.
Discover this and much more at turtlebay.org.
Are you looking to take your business to the next level? Don't let staffing issues or HR red tape stop you from growing. The most successful businesses are those that have mastered their HR and staffing needs, and they have done it with O2 Employment Services. Finding qualified help is harder and more expensive than ever. HR regulations are getting more and more complex and confusing. For over 20 years, O2 has been providing the foundation successful businesses need to grow, assisting employers with their HR, payroll, workers' comp, benefits and staffing. Partnering with O2 gives you the expertise you need to manage your business and employees. Outsourcing your HR and staffing is no longer a luxury. It's a necessity for successful businesses, and it is more affordable than you think. Let O2 show you how we can help you reduce your HR complexities, hire the right talent, and get back to growing your business. Call O2 today at 530-223-4674 or visit us online at o2es.com.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
This summer, stack the deck in your favor with a night of music, laughter, and Broadway magic with the Shasta College summer musical comedy, Guys and Dolls. Be enthralled by the talents of over 30 singers and actors as they bring this Tony Award-winning classic to life with unforgettable songs, dazzling dancing, and fast-paced fun the whole family will enjoy. Evening performances run July 18th through the 26th, with two matinees on July 20th and 27th, and a special ASL show on July 24th at the Shasta College Theater in Reading. Tickets are $20 for general admission, $15 for seniors, and just $5 for students. Reserve your seats now at shastacollege.edu/artsevents. Have some cool family fun this summer with the classic and affordable live orchestra musical, Guys and Dolls. Get your tickets today. See you at the show.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope, but that's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works.
You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. Talking with Claire Morrell, fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, also author of the new book, The Tech Exit, A Practical Guide to Freeing Kids and Teens from Smartphones. All right, Claire, how to do it? Freeing kids and teens from smartphones. You say detox. Is there a way to ramp down usage, or we're going cold turkey here?
No, that's exactly right. I encourage parents to start with a 30-day digital detox. And it is a cold turkey approach in the sense that you really, to reset a child's brain and nervous system, have to completely get the screens out of their system. And the ideal amount of time is 30 days. Because 2 weeks in, you will probably want to quit. It will feel very difficult. Kids actually experience somewhat like withdrawal symptoms because they're addicted, their bodies, and it's not their fault, but their brains, the way they're wired, have become addicted to these things. But then what parents say is when they made it to 30 days, they could not believe the results they saw in their kids. Their habits did change and their bodies and their nervous systems did re-regulate, and they were actually able to enjoy real life pleasures again. And so then these families decided to keep going over the long term. And so I walk parents through exactly how to do this detox, which just means getting all the screens out of your home for 30 days and instead filling your children's time with screen-free activities. I even offer a practical tip sheet to parents on my book website, thetechexit.com, with ideas of activities to have your kids do instead at all different ages. And I would just say the summer is a great time to do this. Kids are not in school. There's a lot more outdoor things that they can be doing with their time. You could even go on a screen-free family vacation for a week as the start of the detox and then come home and keep going. And it may be difficult at first and require a lot more of your parental time and attention to help kids learn how to play again off of a screen. But what happens is over time, they actually begin to learn how to play independently. They develop their own creativity and imagination, and it gets a lot easier over the long term. So there are some short-term costs, but I explained to parents it's truly never too late to reverse course on screens. The earlier the better, the more plastic a child's brain is, the younger they are, the easier it is for them to reshape those habits. And it's truly never too late. And so even if you've given a teenager a smartphone, you can take it back, explaining your reasons why to your child and giving them the gift of even a few more years that they may have left at home, helping them shape their habits for adult life off of a smartphone.
You offer suggestions, feast, and very quickly, find other families, explain, educate, exemplify, adopt alternatives, set up digital accountability and screen rules, and trade screen for real life responsibilities and pursuits. We'll talk about a couple of them. People can find much more information in The Tech Exit, of course, or thetechexit.com. Find other families. You talk about relieving or finding counter pressures to go against the initial pressure parents have to go along and to give their kids smartphones. I will say, you know, here in Hillsdale, we're pretty lucky in that there is a not insignificant number of families who have made this choice to not give their children phones. And being in a community like that does make this easier. How can parents out there who aren't in Hillsdale find similar people?
No, it's a great question. And I try to share a lot of examples in my book because this was probably the number one most critical factor for success for the families who have done this over the long term is that they found a few other families to do this with them. And it doesn't mean it was everyone in their community, but just having a contingent of parents who were your allies in this, sharing those convictions, and then that provided a few friends for your child who also weren't on the smartphone. So I really encourage parents, even just finding one other family is a huge help in this effort. And I give examples just One example is just talking to your neighbors on your street. All the families may not share the exact same tech restrictions, but if you can focus on the positive of trying to get your kids playing outside together in your neighborhood, that can be hugely transformative to just the culture of the neighborhood and the street. If it's a culture built around kids riding their bikes, playing outside together instead of being on screen. So talk to your neighbors, the people you live immediately next to, even just finding a few other families can really tip the balance in the other direction, where then all the other kids in the neighborhood see those kids playing outside and they're attracted to that and they want to join them. And so it can be a really positive antidote to screens. Other families reached out to parents at their school or their church community. A lot of these kind of parent groups started around just opening a conversation, inviting people over to their home to say, hey, we just want to talk about resisting smartphones for our kids, if any other parents are interested. So just being the parent to open the conversation, I think you will actually find there are a lot of parents out there who are desirous of this and just are unsure of how to do that, or maybe just a little bit afraid to take the first step. Mm-hmm. And so you being willing to put yourself out there, having the courage to take the first step, I think you will find a lot of other parents will join you. So I would just encourage you to reach out to the parents that you know in your school, your neighborhood, or your community and start the conversation.
Claire Morrell is with us. Her book, The Tech Exit, A Practical Guide to Freeing Kids and Teens from Smartphones. I think the explain, educate, exemplify might be, now you're the author, but might be the most important of these five as I've read and saw some of these questions. Maybe a couple of quick questions that pop up, because this is where you talk to your children about why this is a good idea, hear their objections, and then model for them proper behavior. So you might hear, or I've heard from the outside, look, this is like alcohol, right? If you don't give your kids a taste of it when they're at home, when you're the parent, when they get free and they're by themselves, they're going to go crazy. They're going to binge on, say, smartphones and digital life once they're in college, once they're outside your home. Any evidence that that takes place?
So, in fact, the families I've spoken to said it was the exact opposite. This fear of binging later. And it was really for two reasons. The first is that just helping them form their habits from the ages 0 to 18 without a smartphone means that even if they go to college and get a smartphone, they recognize in themselves when they're using it too much, because they have a vision of themselves without the smartphone. They have developed their self-control, their habits to not be dependent on using one. And so the kids, the grown kids I spoke to, they all used their smartphones way less than their peers. And they even said, I could kind of tell, like, okay, I've been on my phone too much this week. I'm going to scale back. The second thing is the reason that these kids didn't binge is because it was a critical part of their parenting to explain the harms they were trying to protect their kids from, and actually explain the rationale behind the decisions to try to get their kids to buy into what they were doing. And so these weren't just rules kind of handed down from on high, but these were actually conversations they were having constantly with their kids about a wise use of technology. And there were other ways they were allowing kids to practice using the internet in the home in a way that was very public and very purposeful. And so a lot of these families would allow a child to use the internet on a computer for a specific purpose. Maybe it was research. And they would do it in a way that the child was actually learning to use the internet as a tool rather than being used by it, just being sucked into kind of this constant scrolling entertainment use of the screen. And so that way, when the child does get a smartphone, they have access to the internet. They've been trained on how to approach it and use it in a very purposeful way. And that has really borne out in all the families I spoke with, that those two things of helping them form their habits without this very powerful tool that takes more maturity to operate, and then having a lot of conversations and training in the home so that the children understand those reasons so that they can then wisely navigate these digital temptations as adults.
We're talking with Claire Morrell. She's the author of The Tech Exit, A Practical Guide to Freeing Kids and Teens from Smartphones. One more segment with Claire coming up next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
But join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
This is Carl Bott
and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram, talking with Claire Morrell for one more segment. She's the author of The Tech Exit, a practical guide to freeing kids and teens from smartphones. More at thetechexit.com. Claire, as you have conversations with your kids about this, you will hear objections, of course, and I think some, if not most, are perhaps made in good faith. There is an objection. I need this particular app. This is how we talk to each other. This is how a school project is going to get done. Or I just won't have friends. My friends are texting. My friends are on their phones all the time. If I'm not on my phone, I won't have any friends. How do you answer those objections from your children?
Yeah, and these are some of the real challenges. I'm not trying to deny or minimize that there are some costs to these decisions. I will say that on the friendship front, that is part of why finding other families, so your child does have a few other friends who also aren't on smartphones or social media, can be incredibly helpful. The other thing I will say is it's part of actually training our children to recognize what real friendship looks like. So a lot of parents said their technology decisions ended up being very friend filtering for their kids, because if a friend wasn't willing to reach out to their child another way because, you know, they weren't on Snapchat or they weren't on a social media app, then that was revealing that that person is not a real friend. Mm-hmm. But a real friend will respect your differences. Even if they don't have the same technology standards, they will accommodate your differences and find a way to reach out. And so a lot of these families shared their kids actually had a mix of friends, some who weren't on smartphones and some who were. But the kids who were on smartphones were actually real, genuine friends who found ways to include their kids in what the group was doing, even if they weren't on the social media apps or the group texts on the smartphone. And so it is, I think, teaching our kids to be courageous in the sense that they will look different than a lot of their peers. Mm-hmm. But over time, these families said that their kids actually started to notice the differences positively. They said, oh my goodness, like our friends who are on smartphones, they're so lame. Like they don't talk to us when we're in group settings. And so I think trying to just train our children that it's not a bad thing to be different. Mm-hmm. that this is what courage looks like, that, you know, doing the right thing, even when it's difficult, and you will find real friends that way. That a friend will find a way to get in touch with you if they're a true friend. And so these are just early opportunities really to train our children on how to find good friends. And technology decisions can be one of the factors that is just very revealing. Oh, the requirements for apps.
Yes.
This is another big challenge for parents, because a lot of schools and even sports teams will require certain apps. And so what these families found was just that parents just need to push back a little bit, that they were always able to find some type of workaround arrangement with the school or the coach. But often I think parents feel like, oh no, they need this app, we have to get them a smartphone. But it's possible to just explain to the coach that, you know, your child's not on the smartphone and they're going to have to find another way to get communications or updates from the team. And so I think
Claire Morrell with us, her book, The Tech Exit, A Practical Guide to Freeing Kids and Teens from Smartphones. One more question from that chapter, which is about Exemplify and the use mm-hmm. of smartphones and tech by parents. Look, parents are adults and there are different needs and there are different ways they will use that technology than children, than their kids will. And yet, as you point out, kids are watching virtually all mm-hmm. the time and they see the way that you use the technology. What's the balance there? How do you work that out?
This is a great point, and one that I really did bring up in the book, because I think that we as parents are probably the most powerful example to our kids of how we want them to use technology wisely. And so if we're not giving them these smartphones for all the reasons that I outlined in the book, the best way we can really train them for how we want them to use it as an adult is to model it ourselves. And I think that really starts with just us as parents distancing ourselves more physically from our devices, especially when we're in the home, especially when we're with our kids. And so a lot of these tech exit families had practices that helped them do that, like phone boxes where they would just deposit their devices when they came home for the day, power them down to really be present with their kids, because we are teaching them then what they should value. And I think every time that we look at our phone while our child is talking to us, we are telling them that the phone is more valuable, you know, than they are, than the person standing in front of us. And I think we all want our children to value people and relationships more than the phones. And so we have to really examine our own tech use. It's very difficult to constantly be exerting that self-control to not check our phones. And so the more we can actually distance ourselves from them or dumb our own phones down, mm-hmm. lots of parents just took the internet browser off their phones or just ruthlessly eliminated apps. Like, I actually don't need to do this thing on my phone. That can wait to be done on a computer. Turning off notifications, putting your phone in grayscale, like just making it less visually appealing to you are all practices that can help us have a healthier relationship with our own technology, which will then be a very powerful example and model to our kids.
Readers can find more about the rest of Feast in the book, The Tech Exit. I wanted to ask a couple questions about the collective solutions in the few minutes we mm-hmm. have left. Getting screens out of schools, I was pleasantly surprised to see even blue state Democrat governors in Illinois and Michigan recently call for this. Are you at all surprised that this is apparently a policy that's going to cross party lines?
I'm really pleasantly surprised, but I think it speaks to just the recognition, the broader recognition that the phones have been so harmful for our kids, and particularly harmful in the learning environment, and which is not just the learning environment in the classroom, but just the fact that the entire school day is a child's main environment during the day. And it's both an academic environment and a social environment. And I think the reason we've seen so many states adopting these policies is because the research, some of the early implementers of phone bans just proved so wildly successful that the positive outcomes were just so clear. Not only was it increases in GPAs and kids' grades and test scores, but also in their social engagement. A study out in Norway, an early study showed also it majorly improved just the mental health outcomes of the students, less students struggling with a lot of the mental health conditions like anxiety or depression or these things by just eliminating the phones from the school day. To see the improvement in not just educational outcomes, but really just protecting the social environment that kids then start talking to each other again, and they're talking with their teachers, and they're really engaged socially, not isolated on their phones.
One final question. I was so happy to see you close the book in this manner, essentially answering the question, what are we for? The affirmative argument, as opposed to just saying this is all bad, it's harming our children. Okay, what about the alternatives are so attractive? What is the benefit of moving away and doing things in a different way?
Yeah, so I close the book by asking the bigger question that in some ways, taking away the screens or exiting smartphones and social media is the first step. But the bigger question then is what we re-enter instead. And I was really trying to hold out a positive vision in this book that there is so much more to life that if we really ask ourselves, what is the purpose of childhood? What do we want for our kids? What do we want them to be like as adults? It makes it really clear that screens are not delivering the things that we want. And that actually these families, when they exit technology, the main thing that they pursue instead is real life relationships, but also real life responsibilities and service to other people. And I think it's really powerful, even just thinking about the kind of mental health crisis we're seeing among kids today because of the phones, that when they start learning how to instead serve their families, first and foremost, taking on tasks and responsibilities around the household, and then serving others in their broader community, just taking their eyes off of themselves is a very powerful antidote to anxiety, that service to other people and understanding that, you know, our purpose, as many of the parents said, they're like, I want my child to have the self-control and the ability to self-give, like the ability of self-gift to develop skills that then will bless other people and make this world a better place. That is incredibly powerful vision to have as parents, and that is what they then fill their kids' childhood with instead. And so that is the kind of positive vision I end the book with, is that as we leave these technologies behind, what we're pursuing instead is this path to true human flourishing. And that really involves cultivating in our kids the ability to learn how to love and serve God and to learn how to love and serve others in the real world.
Claire Morrell is fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She's director of EPPC's Technology and Human Flourishing Project. And the new book is The Tech Exit, A Practical Guide to Freeing Kids and Teens from Smartphones. You can also find more at thetechexit.com. Claire, thanks so much for joining us on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks so much for having me.
Up next, Dr. Ben Whalen returns from Hillsdale's English Department. We continue talking about Mark Twain. This time, Tom Sawyer is in the crosshairs. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Owners, landlords, and tenants trust Authority Property Management at 2663 Victor Avenue. They manage a variety of properties, including single-family homes, apartments, condos, townhouses, multifamily properties, and commercial properties. Authority Property Management offers full-time management, including finding and screening tenants, rent collection, financial reporting, and final walkthrough home inspections when they move out. Contact Authority Property Management today at 530-410-6085 and check out their website at authoritypm.com.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johanneson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
This is Carl Bott. Join Linda and me Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. We're going to discuss what's happening in our city, county, state, and nation. Join in. Miss a day, miss a lot. Free Fire Radio, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m.
FM.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. Be sure to follow us on X for updated show and guest information. We're at Hillsdale Radio, or follow the Hillsdale College Podcast Network there at HC Podcasts. We're joined by Dr. Ben Whalen. He is Associate Professor of English here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Whalen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
We continue our conversation about the American author Mark Twain, and this time looking at a specific work, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. Many of us read this book at some point during our academic lives. Tell us a little bit, set the table for people about Tom Sawyer.
So Tom Sawyer is an orphaned boy who's been adopted by his aunt, and he lives with her in this small town in Missouri on the bank. It's a fictional small town, but it's based on Twain's, the town Hannibal, Missouri, where Twain grew up. But within the work of fiction, St. Petersburg is where Tom grows up on the Mississippi River, and the novel tells about his adventures, which are quite varied and quite intense at times. He almost gets killed by a malevolent character named Injun Joe. He finds treasure. He goes boating. He gets lost in caves. There's another side of the novel, though, which is we see his amours. He falls in love famously with little Becky Thatcher, and he has a little romance with her, and we see that taking place in the schoolroom and in the church. And so it's a wonderful, youthful, delightful, exciting setting where we see different loves and different adventures play out.
What are some of those main themes that we see develop across this novel?
So in Tom Sawyer, certainly childhood and innocence and boyhood are important. So are education. That's actually one of the things that Mark Twain thinks about quite a bit. And he lays it out here in The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, but then I think he reaches greater depths in the sequel, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. So childhood and education and coming of age are important. But actually, if you were to press me, if I was to say what would be maybe the main concern of Twain in this novel, I might call it something like depicting or looking at the scamp, the young boy who's sort of a scamp, a scallywag, and looking at his virtues, in fact, to see that these little boys who get in fights and make messes and get into all sorts of mischief add certain very important things to our culture and society. And so the scamp and his virtues is, I think, one of the main motifs.
Sense of adventure throughout Tom Sawyer as we follow him along on all of his doings throughout the book.
How does Twain use those adventures to comment on societal norms, expectations?
Yeah. So Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer witness a murder. And one of the things that we see is that the adults and the larger society is taken advantage of, and justice is going to be abused in the story until Tom courageously decides to stand up and give the evidence that he witnessed, and hence saves the wrongly accused man. So, for instance, there's the implicit suggestion that even somebody like a scamp who was out at night when he shouldn't have been might see things that the rest of society misses, and see truths that the rest of society misses, and can correct those. So that's one very particular example. But we see different ways in which sometimes adults can be obtuse, mm-hmm. Or too blunt, or assume that children don't understand certain things that in fact they do and that they can add to. So I think there's almost a sense in which, yeah, society and then adults also can learn from children, and we should attend to them. And the sort of innocence of their own perspective and experiences is something that might be a real valuable guide for us, rather than something to simply be ignored or corrected or educated out of them.
Tom Sawyer's a scamp, as you describe him, but he also shows responsibility at times.
Yeah.
How does his character develop through this novel?
It's really charming. I mean, as a character, he's always up to things, and he's willing to manipulate or sort of connive in different situations in order to get the advantage that he wants. So in one famous example, if I can give it just an example from the story, this new judge moves to town, Judge Thatcher, and he comes to the Sunday school to check things out, really, to see how the students are studying. And he brings his little beautiful daughter, Becky, with him. Tom, of course, is never studying Sunday school Bible or memorizing Bible verses, but he sees this pretty girl, and so he decides he wants to impress her. So he has all of these different things that he trades with other boys to gain tickets, which would suggest that he has memorized all of these verses of the Bible. And so he takes the tickets up to the teacher to get his reward, trying to impress Becky, this little girl. And the teacher is surprised, because the teacher doesn't recall that Tom has memorized any verses. But the teacher says, I guess he's got the tickets. So then the judge decides to ask Tom something. And he says, okay, Tom, this is so impressive. You've memorized 2,000 verses of the Bible. Let me just ask you a question. Can you tell me who were the first two disciples that Jesus called? And of course, Tom, because he hasn't been ever paying attention, he's distracted. He's a scamp. He's very uncomfortably tries to wriggle out of the situation. And eventually, when pressed again, he exclaims, David and Goliath, just getting it terribly, terribly wrong. So we see his character like that. He's not entirely honest. He is funny. He's a scamp. But then over the course of the novel, we see real virtues. He exhibits real courage and fortitude and real care and concern, in fact, even for his enemies. So the main villain of the story, who's called Injun Joe, would be willing to kill Tom if he got the chance. But when Tom learns that he's been locked in this cave, Tom is filled with concern and alerts the adults immediately, and they go and find that Injun Joe has, in fact, starved to death where he was locked. But Tom shows concern even for his enemies. And so we do see there is growth, and there are real virtues exhibited in Tom.
Talking with Dr. Ben Whalen about the adventures of Tom Sawyer. Is Twain writing Tom Sawyer, as an avatar, like an everyman child, or is he meant to be this exception to the rule, this sort of character that is outside of the normal American childhood at this point?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that in some ways he is representative of the American boy. And so it's a sort of universal. There's something about this. I think that comes back again in Huckleberry Finn. We'll see that, and Twain will actually move that so that Huck becomes representative of America, of American conscience, etc. But certainly Tom has something sort of archetypally American in his character. He's not the exceptional in that way. This actually for Twain would be an important point in terms of his convictions about what literature should be like, in that Twain was famously critical of romanticism and romantic novelists and fiction writers. And so for him, in a romantic novel, you might have the hero or heroine is going to be some bold character breaking out of the norm. For Twain, writing in what we would call American literary realism, it actually, he wants to capture somebody normal and to find great adventures in the normal. And part of this, in fact, is part of a sort of democratic spirit of the novel, which is that we want to, instead of looking at the totally exceptional norm-defying character, let's look at the sort of, maybe a sort of average American boy and see what he's like.
Why do you think that Tom Sawyer still holds up today for young people who are reading, and even for adults who are reading, and why is it so significant in sort of the timeline of American literature?
Well, I think Twain really does capture truths, not just accidents of the 19th century, but truths about how boys can desire adventures, how they dream, how the imagination looms large, how children play. And so I think there are real truths that he's captured which make this, to some degree, timeless. I also think that the novel as a whole is engrossing. It's humorous, it's quick moving, and it doesn't bog you down. So it's simply a delightful read. In fact, to the listeners of this show, I would just encourage you, if it's been 20, 30 years since you've read Tom Sawyer, just start reading it out loud in the evening with your children. They'll have fun and you'll have fun. There are all sorts of jokes that adults can see that children can't, but it's quick enough, snappy enough book that children and adults alike can really enjoy it. And so I think it combines having both real truths that Twain captures presented in a really delightful and fun manner. So it's an excellent novel.
Dr. Ben Whalen, Associate Professor of English here at Hillsdale College, as we talk about the adventures of Tom Sawyer, we'll return next time and talk about the adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Dr. Whalen, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks so much for having me, Scott.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Claire Morrell, her book, The Tech Exit, and Dr. Ben Whalen from Hillsdale's English Department. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Hi, I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Reading. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering, There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.